So what up, you guys? Welcome to LO Designs Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren, and on this podcast, we talk about the struggle of being a creative. So please tune in where we listen to several guest stars talk about their struggles as a creative and enjoy. Okay, so if you could just provide a small introduction about yourself and your name, who you are, where you're from.
Well, thank you so much for the invite, Lauren. I am Maria de Jong, and I'm an artist, illustrator, and designer from Panama. I own a design studio called Mezclao, that means mixed together. So it's a bad version of a very Panamanian Spanglish with a Z, the C, the cell, A-A-O. And it's just called Mix, like me.
I feel like that is beautiful. And as a mixed person myself, I enjoy that name.
Yeah, and it's very Panamanian. We have a little like English words, but they're misspelled. Like parking is called, it means a hangout, but it's a parking, so it doesn't have a G. And like friends, it's like F-R-E-N. So we do have a lot of like English words are misspelled. So I'm purposely misspell my name, but it means mixed, you know, just because we don't know how much percentage of something I am. I just know I'm 25% Chinese, and everything else is like, doubtly, we don't know how much of each we got.
I think that's beautiful though, like to include, I feel like that's kind of what I've been trying to do as far as like my artwork is trying to be inclusive to multiple cultures.
I think it's beautiful because it's almost like when I see it like a recipe, you know, like we know we have our favorite dish, but we do it our way, or sometimes you don't have things on the fridge and you just make it work. So I think adding that background of your own culture, or even going deeper and exploring things of your culture through your childhood or what your parents told you, or even yourself finding books, I think it brings out so much to your work and informs your work. So I think just go with it. It's great.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And as far as like your childhood and bringing that up, how was your childhood like as far as, you know, being into the creative world? Like, were you always an artist or kind of jumping into it?
They've been asking me this question, like, how did I start? And honestly, since I can remember, I'm holding a pencil and drawing since I'm two, according to my mom. She's an architect, single mom, so only child, drawing paper everywhere I went with her. Everything she had to take me to a meeting, it was like, here's my notebook and pens, go for it while I'm working. So it was very natural for me to do art. It was a thing I did after class, the classes I went to. It was the things that she put me in classes to explore materials. So it was very natural, obvious transition, I guess, for me to like go with art. And I think because we never saw it as like a museum, or, you know, it has to be a fancy place, or it has to be a certain place to be artists. I think that gave me a lot of like confidence to like break through things. Mm-hmm. There was never like, this is the only way to do things. So just mostly like make it work.
I think that's beautiful. And also, like, I see that hard work paid off, because personally, me, I'm like, oh my God, I love your work. Like, I'm just a little fan. I'm going to put that out there. But I'm saying, like, your artwork is beautiful, and you have like your own, I feel like you have your own style with it. But everything you make, and you make certain things too, you could create, like, you put it on a shirt or put it here, but it still has that, you know, you feeling and do it. That's cool.
It came from that you feeling, honestly, came from I have such a bad creative block when I was 25. Mm-hmm. Like, everything will go wrong, Murphy, a whole year of that. Like, every project was not going the right way. Clients were not good for me. Like, it was like everything that could go wrong psychologically, it went wrong. And what happened was that I wasn't feeling it anymore. I wasn't like, you know, feeling myself and feeling my art. And then I was like, I need to do something to shake this off. And I started drawing. I went back to Halloween because I love Halloween. It's like the only holiday I get excited. I want to celebrate and everything. So I started drawing my favorite Halloween movies, characters and stuff like that. And then I started exploring through personal work, the things that made me happy. And for some reason, people were paying me to do that. Like, they're like, oh yeah, we want Gremlins and Hellraiser and Wednesday Addams. And I'm like, okay, great. I'm not that crazy. So that's why I always say I draw from nostalgia in childhood, because I always try to go back to like Ninja Turtles or She-Ra, or like all those 80s colors and Gemini holograms or Sailor Moon. So I think that gives me a lot of where to grab back and where to bring the colors and where to bring that poppiness of 80s and 90s and very like MTV and Nickelodeon and all those like beautiful colors I used to watch as a kid watching.
And it's another thing I was going to ask too, as far as like your career background, did you go to art school or design school?
No, I went to, I said I'm actually an architect.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah. So I'm a trained architect, and I said no more architecture when I was 25. So basically, yeah, I was like, you know, doing the architect work day by day, and I was doing the art as like night gig, side gig, whatever I could do at the same time. So I was doing both things. And then once I finished a project that was like, it was an art hotel in Panama, I was so burned down. I was so tired. I was so exhausted because I was doing two jobs at the same time. And for that, the projects were not coming right. Like the murals were not coming right. The projects were not coming right. The brief was having all the miscommunication. You can think all the red flags. Every single red flag you can see on Instagram is like, I've been through those. And you know, it was just like a year and a half of that. And once I got hired and they pushed me to do digital, I just loved it. It was like, oh, this makes more sense. And then I got deeper and deeper in illustration. I found that illustration was more like, I don't want to offend nobody, but it's more laid back.
I feel like I have some friends too that take illustration in art school, and it's like, it's kind of hard for them just because it's like, I feel like the fact that they went to school for it, it seems kind of really challenging because it's like you do it every day, and it's probably like you don't want to fall out of love with that, I think. But I think what's cool in your stance too, it's kind of like you found it yourself, and it's like it helped you grow and pursue this passion. So I don't know. That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think like I went to architecture school, so I understand 100% when they push you day to day to do something. I think for me was that when I started as an artist and I was like embracing back the idea of being an artist and being maybe a full-time artist, I tried everything, live drawing, murals. Oh, do you have this gig? I'll do this gig. Like I was saying yes to everything, which was good and bad because you have to go with what works for you. And when I, contemporary art for me was like, I don't understand it. Like I love art. I love going to museums. I get inspired, but I will see a painting and I'll be like, I don't connect with it. So I was like, maybe something wrong with me. Maybe I'm weird. You know, like you feel like out of place. And when I started seeing illustration when I was at 28, 29, I was seeing like, I understood it better. Like I understood the sense of humor of the artist. I understood where their inspiration was. Like I wanted to connect more. So I was like, oh, maybe this is a medium for me. And then the more I dig into it, the more I read about it, the more I was going for illustration, I felt like, oh, this is home for me. This is happy. I can express myself. I can explain myself the way I want to explain. I don't have to over concept things. Like it's obvious, but it's not so obvious. So I thought that was the way for me. And I do encourage people to explore and like pick a lane, you know, you can pick whatever lane you want and you can change that lane too. It's 100% valid.
I feel like that's something that art students forget too, is that you don't have to, just because you go to school for it too, you don't have to feel like that's where it's going to be forever. Because me too, like I feel like I want to practice illustration, but it's not like I'm scared or nothing, but it's like I feel like practicing it consistently is kind of like my struggle. So I'm probably gonna have like 2-in-1 questions of this, but my first question would be like, how do you know, like what advice do you have for people who think that, you know, that whatever they stick in, they have to stay in? Like, how would you go about that by saying to someone, okay, it's okay to like not just only do design or not just only do illustration, like it's okay to open to new sectors?
I think for me, it's always been the wrong decision makes me know what I want. And I think I have gone through that. Like I've done so many different types of projects when I was being a rookie and when I was starting that I was like, no, this is not for me. And I think not trying out and messing up and making mistakes helps you, but doesn't block you to explore and make other mistakes. So like example, like illustration, I prefer working digital, but I also sketch, but I would love to be that artist that has a beautiful sketchbook, but it's never going to happen. You know, that is not me. I wish I could be that one, but I didn't get that memo. You know, so I think even being forgiving yourself, you know, for exploring. I think the problem is that right now with social media is that everything has to be so perfect that it comes daunting, it comes haunting you, overwhelming, because you're like, I'm not at that stage. And then you're like, oh, but if you see that guy, that artist bio, he's been doing that for like 10 years. You're like, of course he's gonna nail it in 3-minute video. But you have to forgive yourself and pause yourself and be reminded of what you see on social media. It's just the tip of the iceberg of probably many, many years of exploring, making mistakes. So even that, I think, is the hardest part, because you want to do everything so fast. As creators, we get excited. You know, we go to the art supply store, we get it. We're like, yeah, I'm in the groove, I'm going to get it. And then you mess up and you forget that messing up is part of the process. And I think that comes from being in art school or having technical classes. Like, example, like my art teachers in architecture bullied me. They didn't like me. They didn't like I was left-handed. They didn't like I grabbed their pencil the wrong way. They hated my handwriting. That's what I call my handwriting work self-love, because if my teachers hated my handwriting, they picked on my handwriting.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so when I say like teachers blocking you, you got, I think the biggest mistake from our generation and generations before us is that that's just one person's opinion. You know, that person's doing a job. Mm-hmm. Yes, he has experience. He might know the scene, but that's just one human against how many more in the scene. So I think we believe, because we were taught that teachers were like the masters, you know, this like Yoda, this whole like thing, this one guy that will take us to the path. But I think it's, yeah, he might take us to the path, but there's another one, there's another teacher you can take, you know, it's just one person's opinion. And that person doesn't know the whole scene because the scene is too big. Mm-hmm. You're always finding new talent. You're always exploring new things. So I think being haunted by those opinions of those teachers, yes, it will mark you good or bad, but just in a way kind of forgive yourself and try it again.
Yeah, I think that is kind of a reminder that I have to tell myself this too. Just because with school, it's like, this is wrong, this is right, this is wrong, this is right. And then you feel like, oh my gosh, like, and then it's like you go into work and they say, be experimental still. And it's like, how am I going to be experimental when I still have this like right or wrong complex? And it's like,
oh, you know, it's every day. Like, every project gives me the hunts. It hunts me, because I'm like, when I'm starting a new style for a project or a new art direction, it's like, it's just like this a couple days or weeks when I'm like, I'm not sure this is it. It's like, keep exploring. I keep like going until like I finally see it. It's like almost like 3 a.m. in the morning, or is it early in the morning? And I'm like, I can breathe because I know it's going on the right direction. But you always get that. I think we don't talk about it, that it's always there. It's always going to haunt you. It's not like, you know, it's not that older you get, it goes away. I hope, I don't know, maybe somebody spooked it out. I haven't yet. I still haven't. But I think that's like when you talk about trusting your gut, is you know when it's going on the right direction on your own, and it's good to trust yourself, because then when you trust yourself, you're more confident to talk to it to a client or talk to a provider or collaborator, because you're confident in what you are showing them. So I think going back and trusting what you like before you show it to them, I think it's very good.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that too, because what I like about school is like, especially this year, I'm in my junior year of college, and it's like they're getting to the point now where now they're trying to express, when we do certain things, how would it relate to a client or in client work and stuff. And I think I like messed up on a project. I totally messed up. I went in the whole wrong direction, right? And going into class, and I tend to do this just because I don't want to just act like I didn't know what I was doing. I just say, oh yeah, I messed up. Look, this is what happened. And what he said to me was, and I cherish my professor for saying this. He was just basically like, you know, don't start with a negative, because let's say you have a client for the first week and they pay you to do all this work, and then you just walk into the meeting and they're like, oh, I did terrible and I didn't do this right. So he was basically trying to say, you know, don't go too hard on yourself as far as like going straight into the negative. Try to figure things out, say how you experimented with different things, and mm-hmm. then try to say how you did it differently. But yeah, I feel like we need to be reminded of that too. Like, everything is not going to be perfect, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think I agree with his comment 50-50, honestly, because I feel like client work is communication first. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's a conversation. Like, if you don't get along since day one, email one, meeting one, Zoom meeting one, whatever, it's not going to go right, because sometimes, like you said, like, you know it's not 100% there, and you know it. You're like, if I only had one more day, or maybe I know this will be the right way, but I need somebody else to back me up because I'm not sure. Because at the end of the day, client has to love it. So you do need to take the client through the process, so he understands the value of what you're doing. Because if you have a conversation with him and then you show everything beautiful and pretty, what's going to happen is he doesn't understand how many hours it took you to do that process and come to that solution. And then they don't value you. And if they don't value you, they won't hire you back. They'll go find out somebody else, because they're like, oh, it was easy. She just did it. It was like, I don't know how many hours took her to make that decision, or why did she pick that color? So I do believe that it's maybe not putting on negative words, mm-hmm. but more maybe inviting them to be part of the process in a way where they won't daunt you and be like, it'll take you back to more sadness. But yes, sometimes like I'm like, that we're apart, like we already figured out the logo and the colors and maybe not so sure about the layout. And I'm like, okay, guys, like, this is where I'm going for. Are we good or not? And they're like, okay, this is not good. Okay, great. I already have like two backup plans, but I just want to like double check. And double checking with them makes them be part of the process. So when they finally have their branding, they're like, oh yeah, we picked this. And this is why she did this shape. And this is why we have these colors. And I think it is a conversation. And I feel like when I was doing client work for architecture, teachers were like so selfish. They were like, you know everything and client knows nothing. Mm. Like that was the way I was raised when it came to design and talking to clients. And I feel like that's why I probably quit architecture. Probably I had that creative block, because the way I was raised, in especially in Latin America, is very macho. Like, it's like almost like creatives are a different breed of human. Therefore, normal business people would never talk to us, you know? So it creates this isolation and this introverted, daunting situation to talk to a client when a client is just another human being. Mm-hmm. You know, he might not know about art, but he knows what he likes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's actually great that you mentioned that, just because because I try to do client projects on the side just so I can feel the process myself and how.
Yeah, it's great.
And I'm starting to notice that too when it comes to like giving that client that information, because when they say value in what you do, it's not just like, you know, the beautiful work that you create. It's kind of like that process is very important too, because let's say they get a logo or they get something and it's like, all right, it's perfect, it's done. But if you don't have that explanation or the reasons behind it, it's like, they don't feel connected to it as much, and you have to.
And that's very dangerous. They don't feel connected. They're gonna mess up with your logo. You're gonna see your logo thrown wrong. You know, like you know what's coming. You send that beautiful file. Everything is cleaned up, and somehow someone grabbed it and put something that you hate, and it's destroyed.
It's terrible. I feel so.
And you feel that download. You feel that down mode on yourself, because I've been there. It's like.
And that's the thing too that I also wanted to ask, because I see that you have like an artistic style. Like, how do you bring that within your client work, or how do you bring, you know, that creativeness within your client work to make it seem like you still have that creative feel or that creative freedom in that way?
That's the reason why I founded the studio. So I thought at the beginning of the studio when I was 25, when I put the name, I thought I could do everything.
I feel like that's going to be it.
You know, we're hoarders, okay? There's no joy of like one thing. I wish that's not a thing. You know, we want to do everything. So I thought I could be my own self in art. And I thought the studio could be the commercial work. Lies. that was not it. It's both things. So I accepted. I try to make sure that when a client's hiring me, they really like my studio and my aesthetic. So when they try to put me, let's say, shadows or textures, I'm like, no. Unless it's a material, then yes. Like this is where that's where I'm like stubborn. I'm like, you can't take me out of my style in terms of line work, example. Like I don't do edges in black. That's like all my work has no edge whatsoever. So like I do try in the discovery phase or in the look and feel to double check that part. I do also ask clients if they say like, oh, I really love your work. I was like, oh, do you mind resending me exactly which one do you like? So I can have an idea of what they saw of my work that they were gravitating towards. And then from there, I can build something different. But like the color palettes are a conversation between me and my clients. So it's a lot of Easter eggs between both of us in the first meeting. And like, example, like, I did a sportswear in Panama And my first meeting with the guy, it was like on the phone call. And he's like, I got to tell you something. Don't get offended. Don't get mad. But your artwork looks like Miami Vice. And in my brain, I've been fantasizing my prints in Miami Vice for like 3 years, but I've never told anyone but myself and probably the coffee mug. So when he said that, I was like, this is the guy for me. This is how I know it's going to work. You just threw out a reference thinking I'm going to get offended. And I've been living my Miami Vice fantasy for like 3 years. So I think like having those conversations where it clicks, you're like, okay, we're going to go good. So that's why I feel it should be a conversation, because think about it. So most clients who have the budget, they're so intimidated talking to a creative because they feel the creative is going to attack them or make them feel like their opinions are not valued. So that's why I feel it should be a conversation and with illustration, I can geek on ridiculous stuff. Like I always tell clients, whenever you get excited, please send me 20 videos of that. Send my way. It's like, I want to know more about it. It's like, I'm going to ask you all the annoying questions because I want to find those good things that make you interesting. Those things that get you passionate, and I'm going to put it through the branding. So that's why I feel like, yes, you do need to have that good conversation. But in art class, design class, they are like, no, creatives know everything, clients know nothing. So I think it's...
You have to still educate your client at the same time.
Yeah, you gotta educate them. But I think the good thing with client work, it's commercial. So there is a goal at the end of the day. It's either growing their audience. Is it actually maybe selling more? So you can make educated decisions with your client based on, oh, if this logo is too messy, nobody's gonna recognize it on the shelves. Or maybe they want to go for something very cliche and you're like, look, there's 20 brands that have the same logo. How are they going to tell it looks like it looks different? So that's a more educated, less harsh decision. So when you put that commercial point of view, they understand where you're coming from. So you're not coming from where I like this and you don't like this. We should go with what I like. You're making a decision based on sales, on market, on how is the audience going to connect to it. Is it going to be recognizable on a shelf? Is it going to be known right away? Is the reference going to connect to other people from their audience? So sometimes I like to work with clients who already have their brand. They've been at least in the market for 1 year, 2 years, or at least they have gone through the whole saga like I did, you know, when you're like, you want to do everything and then everything goes to hell and then everything goes back together and then you figure it out. Because then they appreciate and they value the process because it was also a struggle for them to find that product, to find their brand, to find what makes them happy. So once they're like ready to do a new branding or rebrand or launch a new product, it's easier for them to make an educated decision because they also struggle. They also had problems connecting to the market, or probably they thought this was going to be their buyer and their buyer is somebody else.
That's actually true. I feel like you're helping me solve all these issues as far as like my client with the relationship with my client work, especially with like trying to find, like, you know, they say try to find your dream client. Like I've been trying to figure out like what are the type of things that I like to design.
I did a dream client mood board. I did it a couple years when I relaunched 3 years ago.
You could do a mood board for that. That's actually
you gotta reverse engineer yourself. So I did a mood board for my dream client. You know, almost like, if this was dating, but it's not dating, who is the one for you? I don't have it for dating. I have it for clients. Yes. just going to put it out there. When it comes to work, I'm really great.
Yes.
But this is what you do. You just find what brands do you want to work with? Who do you want to connect with? Who will be your ideal client? Is it your same age group? Is it your same, if it's only Latinx? Like for some reason, now I'm getting more Latinos and they're very similar to where I am, but it wasn't on purpose. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, I just been connecting to them through the mood board in my brain that works. And I think you taking your own time and being, who do I want to work with? Not because they're trendy, not because they're popular, but because they actually get you excited, helps you nail down that niche or that group of people that you can work with. Example, like I love cooking. That's like my hobby / creative mental block. I need to cook. I love going to grocery stores. I love getting ingredients. I love creating things from scratch. So I love working with food brands. And when I get a food brand, I get so excited because I really love cooking. So I'm like, can I try the sauce? Can I try what was the ingredient? How do you got the family recipe? So I love all that process. So I get very excited. Same with textiles. I love patterns. I love wearing bright colors, and getting bright patterns that look good on me is really hard. So I'm very picky on myself. I'm curvy. So it's like, I'm going to make sure any girl looks good on those prints, because I know the struggle of finding the right print that makes you feel good. So I'm very OCD with that with for a client, because I'm like, look, I know how hard it is when you see something on a mannequin and you throw it out, it doesn't look good on you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make sure it looks good on a Latina, on a girl, on a Black girl, and a girl like Afro-Latina, because I want that color to pop and look amazing on her skin. So all those things that make that are important for you, you can bring it to your work and get your clients to get excited and see that value of working with you, because you care about their brand. You care about the same values. You care what they stand for.
That's actually great.
Get you healthier clients.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot more sense too. Like, you find the things that you are passionate about yourself that would make you passionate in working with them.
There's going to be days you're not going to love it. You know, there's days it doesn't work out for you. There's days that you're like questioning what what have you done for your life. That happens. It doesn't. There's no end story. I don't know if there's like an age gap or some boss level you hit that doesn't happen, but it still hasn't happened to me. And I think if you keep picking things that gets you excited, that will get you through those bad days, because you'll be like, okay, right now it's not great, but I'm really excited what this brand or what this client stands for. And I'm so happy to see it launch. So I'm going to push through those bad days and make it work. Mm-hmm. But that has to be something that excites you, not necessarily the client knows that.
Mm-hmm. With your art style too, like, does that kind of factor in? I liked what you said too, how like you don't do shadows, like certain things like that.
Exactly. I did shadows in architecture with buildings and perspective, and I honestly, it wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. Drove me crazy, like 3D mapping of where the shadow's gonna go at 5 p.m. not my thing.
I think that's so great.
So I was like, I'm not gonna do that, doesn't mm-hmm. work for me. Like, there's other artists who do that, and then if I see a client and he's really gravitating to somebody else, I'll be like, look, there's other creatives who do this style. Like, you should, and that's when you educate the client. You're like, look, there's certain artists who are great in different styles. There's artists who do just one style. If you really like a style that's not mine, maybe you should hire that artist, not me, to do that artist style. Because he's going to be way better than me, because that's him, not me. So I think that's when you have to be honest with yourself, because if you try to do that style, you're going to be miserable. You're like exploring something new with a paid client that expecting you to be that other person and not you. That's like red flags everywhere.
That is, I feel like this is the talk I've been waiting for with myself. It's just because, and you can hear it too, like one thing I always struggle with is the struggle of trying to find the difference with my artwork and my design work. It's like, with my artwork, I don't know if I have a certain style. Some people say I do, but with my artwork, I have this style. I have this theme, like obviously bright colors, the feel of vibrancy, mm-hmm. right? But it's like, I don't want to separate that from the corporate design feel.
And you don't have to.
And that's why I've been, kind of just like, what am I going to do when it comes to client work, or when the client wants a certain thing? Like, I don't want to have to, you know, pretend I'm this other person that could design this whole thing for someone else. That's why I'm trying to figure out what are the type of things I like, what are the type of clients I want to work with, just because I know like that work will be better, and that's the type of work I would want to put in my portfolio too.
You don't want to put work that you don't love. Yes. If you put work that you don't love, you're going to keep getting hired for things you don't love. And that's like 3 to 4 years of no, you don't want to do that. That's like another asking for a mental block right there.
Yes.
you know it's going to come. It's going to come, because if you don't pick projects that gets you excited, then when you're doubting yourself, who's going to pull you up? Like, the client is not going to pull you up, because he's still exploring what he wants. He's trusting you to give him that art direction. But if you can. Example, like sometimes I do more minimal work, but I love minimal work, but it takes me forever. So when a client wants a more minimal work, I'm like, are you sure? Because it's going to take longer than my usual all over everything in it kind of design. I love it. I can do it. But it's going to take you to be confident with negative space, like you not feeling that there's not going to be a lot of stuff in it. Like, you got to be very confident if you're going to pull a almost minimal design. So you do have to tell the client that, but as long as you keep the rule of branding and design, that it's like good proportion, good scale, readability, can you read the text that you're adding? Can somebody who get it in 5 minutes, so you don't have to over explain every time they see it, then you're good. You can explore any style.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. I'm taking like all mental notes right now tonight.
Great.
But we're also hitting like the mark of like the middle mark. So I always ask this question to every creative, and the question would be, what do you struggle with?
Overthinking. I'm an overthinker.
you said that with so much passion. Like, I overthink everything. Like,
yeah, I overthink everything. It's like I send an email and then I'm like, luckily I have too many tasks to do to overthink. That's how I calm it down. I calm the overthinking wolves, because it's like I have a lot of stuff to do, therefore I can't panic. And that's how it kind of goes. I think sometimes, you know, self-sabotage. Like, I feel like right now, yeah, social media is great and social media gets you new clients, but that balance of process and figuring things out for me for commercial work is like, I like my client work to keep it private. I don't really share the process just between me and the client, because we might change it the next day. You know, so like having other people's opinions while I'm working, that it's not my client or my collaborators, or I'm working with the team I'm working, I feel like it distracts me from what I'm trying to get done. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people on social media, they want to give opinions just to talk, you know, when you're done. And so I think having that balance for me is a struggle. You know, it's just like sometimes like, I want to hide for 4 days and just answer emails, but I also have to be consistent to show what I exist and I'm working. So it's a hard balance. I don't know. Still figuring that out.
I was going to ask too, because your social media is popping, in my opinion. I'm like, oh, she makes her artwork. I'm sitting here. I'm like, dang, I should do like some art. I need to do more artwork on my page. And not so much like, oh, design tips. Like,
yeah, I think it's hard. It is hard. It's like, I'm pushing myself to do it more, but it's hard because some days I'm like, I do really have to do a lot of projects. And I'm like, what do I post today? Because I'm working, but I can't share it because I'm still figuring it out. So it's like, what do I do? Should I put a Sailor Moon GIF? That's what I do. Explain to Sailor Moon. Because it's hard. It's like sometimes like I want to explore and mess up, but I don't want to show it. You know, it's like I feel there's a difference between process, creative process, and documenting your process. I feel documenting is when you take the nice photo, when you take the sketches, and you take everything, and that's what you should share on social media. And your creative process is part of freaking out, getting coffee, you know, going for a walk, cooking something, you know,
like that's that like relaxed time that you need.
Exactly. The downtime you need to like, you know, sit on the floor and look at the ceiling, watch a TV series. So like, you know, I feel we should be forgive ourselves more of like taking more of those creative process things and not be so pressured to be picture perfect.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I saw something on LinkedIn. It was like a girl crying, and like I comment this. It's like social media, even in it's sad too, because this is social media in general. But even as a creative, it's the same thing. It's like you're supposed to post things and make everything look perfect, and like you live this lavish life. And even as an artist too, you post all this nice, perfect artwork, and you don't show the mess ups. You don't show what's thrown away. Yeah, the freak out mode, like that is not shared. And it's like when we go through these things, we feel like we're by ourselves. We feel like we don't have that, you know, like I'm a terrible artist. But you don't understand that so many artists have been in that place to get
where. Maybe this is why we need more podcasts like this. You know, to be down and talk real about it, because it's not so hard to show it on a picture. Mm-hmm. You know, because we do all creatives understand that our social media is our portfolio. Mm-hmm. So of course we want to show our best because clients are going to hire us, and therefore we can still be artists and still do the things we love. So of course we're going to try to share the best of ourselves, because a stranger doesn't want to see you freaking out.
Yeah, they're going to be like, what is wrong with her? She's having
exactly. You know, like how honest can you be and be vulnerable and also be, you know, it's a bit overwhelming when it's just a one person team. You know, like maybe if there was more people in the team, maybe I wouldn't freak out that much. But, you know, it's like, do I have time to write a caption or do I have time to write an email? So it's like, it's finding that balance. And I'm always going to put work first and then social media later, because work is what pays the bills. So, mm-hmm.
That, yes, and that was something that you also mentioned, and like I'm so happy, like I feel like whenever I talk to a guest and it's just magically, this magically happens, I feel like whatever I have been personally struggling with that or in the past couple weeks, a podcast guest will come on and say, hey, this is my struggle, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's what I do. I listen to my podcast too, trust me. It's while I'm cooking and I'm having a creative blog, I'm like, I need to listen to a podcast, or I need to watch something that somebody creative that maybe it was years ago, but it totally makes sense. And I'm like, yes, I'm back, back in my senses, back on not panicking about something. And it's like, yeah, I'll pull through. I'll make it work.
Yes. And that work to life balance. So I have been personally struggling with this just because I am now getting, like, summer ended and summer wasn't as hectic because, you know, I didn't have so much schoolwork and so much work, but now I'm coming back and it's like, and now it's midterms and then it's like, oh, I have to do school. Oh, I have a new job. I have to fit that in. Oh, I have like the job too that I'm having. It's not like a 9-to-5 regular office job anymore. It's more of a design job, so I actually need to take like hours to create something, and it's really like it hit me in the face like a couple weeks ago. It was just terrible because I'm like, this is horrible, like I feel like I'm a terrible artist or I'm a terrible person just because I wasn't able to turn like a piece of artwork for my work on time, and like it's hitting me in the face. I'm like, I'm freaking out, and I was just like, how am I going to balance my work to life balance, you know?
It's hard. I think it's hard because although most people now work remote and most people don't work on office, as creatives, we do have a such non-traditional schedule that other people don't understand. Sometimes people don't get that you just want to have a beer or a coffee and not think about work.
Yes.
words that freak me out if I'm working and I just want to have a hangout. It's like, how's work doing? Freaks me out. It's like, I don't want to think about it. It's like,
I don't want to think about it.
I just want to be in denial for like 2 hours. Can I just be in? So I think it's hard when your work is your passion and it makes you happy, but also haunts you.
Yes, that's what they don't mention.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a bit hard when I'm not right now without traveling, without like having to be inside lockdown, because most people don't understand how much hours it takes and how mentally draining it is. So when you want to hang out, you just want to hang out. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to complain about work. You just want to talk about anything else but work. That's the whole rule. So like, I do have friends who do that, who are creatives, who do get it. But I think trying to find that community is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. So they really understand that, yes, work is hard, but sometimes you just want to be silly. Sometimes you just want to watch a movie and chill.
Yes, I feel like that relaxation time is so underrated for creatives. It's like, that is something we need.
Oh, we need that. And the other thing I learned in COVID was posture and stretching your hands, because I learned that the bad way.
Yes, because I've been worried about that too. I feel bad for my friends who aren't creatives because they don't understand. I'm always like, I always say my head hurts, and it's because I've been staring at a blue light screen all day. Yeah. And they're like, oh my gosh, your head always hurts. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot to mention. Did you know how much I stare at a screen? And then it's like, you sit at a desk all day and then you do yoga or you stretch or you move something and you're popping and locking like the Tin Man. And you're like, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like your health, like that's something that also needs to be like.
Eating habits, health. When I was in university, I used to do half soda, half black coffee to survive for a 4-day deadline. Bad, bad, bad. That's the worst thing you could. Because you know, architecture, you don't sleep for weeks. So like I would like to think that architecture took me to a training of not sleeping and making through a deadline. For some reason, that's like the one thing I could take away from that career. But at the same time, it comes with so many bad habits, and then trying to detox your body and finding healthier ways to eat. So that, like, if I know I have crazy, I call it mashup deadline weeks, because for some reason, all the clients pick similar deadlines or like 3 days difference. So I call it like mashup week. It's mashup week. I know what's going to happen. So I just go to the grocery store, get all the stuff I need, start baking cookies, healthy snacks, have everything on the go ready. So when that week starts that I have no time for cooking, I'm ready. Like, I got everything.
Do that.
So it's like almost like doomsday prepper means creative life. Just be ready for when that's going to hit. And try to take breaks. I try to, you know, I binge watch while work. So like the problem with me is like once I run out of TV series, it's gonna be like 3 hours of my life again wasted trying to think what I'm gonna watch next. Because I need a series. I need a TV series to like go pull through a deadline. So I'm literally running out of series in Netflix right now.
I feel like that's the thing too. Like, how do you try to get work done when it comes to work that you don't like to do, I should say?
I do it first.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. I do it first.
I've been trying to.
And I try to break it down, try to break down tasks as much as possible so you feel it's a win-win. So example, like, let's say like, oh, half my day I'm going to create all the new files and make sure the artboards are right and, you know, like prepping your digital file. So that takes time. So I do it first. So I just like make a list and like, you know, just write down the sizes of all the artboards, make sure all the colors are installed, make sure all the, then like another task will be like cleaning up all the logos of the partners. Cause you know, no matter how much work you do, they always send you a logo with a background. So, you know, that's, you don't want to clean it, but you need to clean it to get that part done. So I try to break down as many tasks that I don't like and do them first while the coffee's still warm and still running through my veins. And then I lock down more the hours as like cleaning vectors and all that other stuff later.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta make a note of that because tonight is kind of like homework night, you know? And that's the thing too with work-life balance. It's just like, you have to try to fit things in because it's like you still.
Well, I take my laptop everywhere I go. That's homework life balance.
I had to do that today. I was like, and I think that's kind of when I started to get frustrated earlier today, just because of like just my bad situation from my home. But it's just like, I feel like I'm taking my computer and I look crazy, and it's like I've been here all day. Yeah. And then
I have that. That's what we're thinking. It's like it's me on a bar with a beer and a computer. Yes.
Yes, it's
so somebody's gonna show up late, and then. It's an hour that I could have done something in the computer and got done. So guess what? This is why always the computer, always my laptop. Like my friends know that I will hang out, but I will take my laptop because something is going to run late and then I'm going to get anxious because I could have got something done before. So yeah, I don't know if it's work-life balance, but it works.
That's why. And then it's like, I don't even know how people balance this as far as like a social life or like
we need another creative who tell us to teach us the way.
Yes, because it's like how do these people hang out on Saturday nights and just have a weekend? Like I'm sitting here, I'm like designing logos all night for fun or for class, but it's like it's so insane to me. And I'm like, is this gonna be for the rest of my life?
I did try to like when I started freelancing and started going more into branding, that's why I do TV series. So I time myself for an episode. So I know like, 40 minutes, 60 minute episode, I'm going to get this task done during this episode. And then the other episode is going to take me this task. So that's when I don't have a TV show, I freak out because I don't have my timer that tells me that I have completed this task. So I know, so when I started estimating how long thing takes me for myself. So when I know I have to do certain tasks, I'll be like, that's going to take 3 hours. So I'll be like, maybe I'll just do them in the morning and get it done. And then I know end of the day, I could be more flexible. That means I can be cleaning vectors, which is love to do, but takes forever, but I can hang out and do other stuff at the same time. Or maybe I will be like writing down copy on my phone on Google Keep while like I'm like writing the concept or stuff like that. So I think breaking down things on task is gonna help you find the better balance of time-wise.
That's actually a great tip too. It's like, and also like timing too, as far as that's the thing, I want to change up my workspace, you know, should I listen to a podcast, should I watch TV? Just because sometimes when I sit in silence and I do my work, it's like I can only do that with specific things, probably like journaling or something that's very like minimum. But it's like when it's like logo work or brand projects, I really take so much time on that, and sitting in quiet, I'm like, I need to
You need something making noise to in order to be focused, and that's me with a TV while working.
That's why I'm gonna keep a note of that too. All of these are like tips for tonight, like I'm gonna change up. But okay, and also some other things that you wanted to talk about, you said like, you know, being a solo female entrepreneur, I think that was like a topic that like hit with
me. I think when my first job as architect, it was kitchen designer, and I did my interview with the owner, was a guy, was fine. But then his wife came over, and I was 23. And she's like, you're 23? And I was like, yes. And she was like, you have a kid? I was like, no. And they're like, oh, you're high risk. And I was like, because apparently not having a kid and paying your bills was high risk. And since then, every, let's call it traditional, more entrepreneur environment, for some reason, they don't like solo women-owned businesses. Like, it's almost like a red flag for them. They're like, oh, but you might change your mind and then drop your business. So it's something I've been hearing for so many different groups and so many social settings where it's more businessy entrepreneur than creative. I don't know why, but it's something that people think about women. So that's why I'm purposely, I put solo one woman show on most of my captions and I try to talk about it because I know there's probably another woman who has her business and she's been to like a network event and someone has out of the blue told her that she's gonna one day wake up and decide to drop her business just because she's a woman. So I think
I have. My teacher was explaining this to me like a couple years ago, like, you know, like being not just like being a woman, but it's like if you have kids, like, or like all your careers is kind of over, like at that point.
Exactly. You know, and then you're like, questioning yourself because you're like, before this, we were talking about art. So how did the kid conversation came in? And then I'm going to quit my job and not be passionate about the things that I've been passionate for years. You know, like, did I got stiff for what? Did I forgot about my own self? Did I forgot the things I love? Yeah, I've been having this awkward questioning that people like throw at me randomly at events or places that I'm not asking for it. When they find out I own my own business, or when they ask me who's my team, and I'm like, my team is my computer, the Wi-Fi, and the coffee.
You're amazing.
You're amazing. Like, who's your team? And I'm like, the laptop, definitely, 100%. I was like, the coffee, yes, I can't live without coffee, and of course, Wi-Fi. That's it. That's a team. We make it work. So I think because it's like, why? Like, so that's why I always like about talking about solo woman-owned businesses. And most of my clients actually are female-owned businesses or solo women-owned businesses because guess what? I can connect to that horrible experience that they tell me. You can't do it. You can't make it work for some reason. I don't know what is about it, but especially in Latin America, it's a very common thing that gets thrown at you on a daily basis without you asking for it.
Yeah, I feel like that's something too that we need to keep in mind, because I feel like it's not that it's hidden, like these type of issues still happen and it's
it happens randomly. You're not having coffee.
You're like, wait, what? And it's
exactly.
And it doesn't, I don't understand, like, and that's the thing too. I feel like if anything, it's even more motivational for them to say that, you know, they're doing it by themselves.
Exactly. I think we should own it. I don't think as creators, we should feel bad if we don't have an office space. I don't think we should feel bad if it's one person show. Hey, one person is making it work and I'm still getting hired. So why am I not going to celebrate and brag about it? Because I feel like through my career, people try to put me down with those things. So I'm like, now I'm like, I'm owning it. Yeah. Like sometimes they ask me, how do you make it work? And I'm like, yeah, I need coffee. It's like, I just give me coffee and I'll show up early in the morning.
And I was going to ask that too. How do you own it? Because I feel like that is something too. Like that's the thing.
That's a lot of drag race RuPaul. That's Mama Ru right there. Podcast right there. I think we should own our mistakes and things that make us different. I feel that's the thing people are scared about. I think we were, like, example, like I mentioned before, my typography, now I'm getting hired for my handwriting, and I was bullied my whole life on my handwriting because I was left-handed. So
I'm a left-handed too. It's like, I feel like I'm talking to my future self, like as far as like being a solo entrepreneur.
Yeah, now you know, I know your answer. So I think embracing those things that could they were picking on you, now they're being celebrated because it makes you unique, you know, like a unique recipe. I feel like, especially in Latino culture, the most beautiful thing is that we're not one thing. We're all different. Mm-hmm. That there's always like something different. Something happened differently. And a little bit of different experience. And I think celebrating that on a positive note, not as in everything is happy, everything is great, but mostly like, hey, things were hard and I got picked on, but hey, I'm going to celebrate those things that make me me. I think is the best way to encourage people to bring a different result, to bring diversity. For me, when I was growing up, there was no diversity on media.
Yes.
There was no diversity in music. There was only one way to be Latina, and then it was a bad Latina. That was me. It was like the black sheep right there. You know, so it's like, you know, you get that stare at 25 from other, you know, Latinas, tias, and they're like, what are you doing with your life? You're not married? You got no kids? It's like, wait. It's like, are you alive?
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like right now with Latinx social media and everything, just break that lack of talking about it and owning it. Because I feel like that's going to help the new generation to embrace more and be more bold than we are. And like, maybe cut them out so many years of overthinking, because, you know, we're telling them, oh, you don't think about that. That's okay. That's normal. That's not a special thing that's going to haunt you. You can get over that. I feel that's the positive way to give back to the community, to give back to the creative scene, to give back to women, because we were told we couldn't do it. We were told that we couldn't work online. We were told we only could get a portfolio if we worked on a studio, if we did one way. And that's the thing that we've been eating through media and content for many years, that if you don't follow these 5 steps, you're gonna lose. That's the narrative that's being fed up most content online right now. It's like, if you don't do this, you won't get this. And that's not true. You can make it work with your own path. You can make your own mistakes. You can choose to focus on one thing and not focus on the other one and still get paid and still make your money and still follow your dreams. So I think taking that stereotype and breaking it out and talking about it is going to help other people, because it helped me through podcasts. Like, sometimes I was like overthinking and I found this random podcast and it was like that one sentence, you know, like almost you feel like she was speaking to you and you're like, mm-hmm. Yes, everything makes more sense now.
And that's the thing too, it makes you feel good.
That's what you need.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like, I don't usually talk about this, but I want to talk about it. Like, I feel like even expressing my culture, because okay, I don't speak Spanish, right? It's been so hard to express the fact that like I am Latina, and expressing that, like, you know, being Latina, or expressing it on social media, or saying that, or mentioning that I support, you know, Latinx artists. It's been so hard to say that or do that, just because that's a struggle that I've had within myself. So that's why I kind of say, like, how am I going to express that or, you know, own it?
I think even owning that part, because, like, example, like, for me, it was for many years when I was a kid, I was never that Latina. I would look more Chinese. So and everything that was standing for being Latina was all the things I wasn't. It was like, every check point, like, nope, yeah, I'm that. You know, like, so even living and growing up in Latin America, I didn't feel Latina. And until I found healthier, you know, examples of Latina women, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is better. And owning up, for example, like, I speak Spanish, but I think I speak Spanish way, way faster than English. So nobody understands me. Mm-hmm. Nobody understands me. Everybody's like, huh? It's like, yeah. I'm like, no, Gary, don't worry about it. So even myself, like, I couldn't find my happy Latino root connection until like a couple years ago, because I noticed that what I was being fed and what I was being told didn't connect with me. Mm-hmm. And once I started searching on my own what actually I liked about Latino culture and what connected to me, then I feel like I could be more proud about it and talk about it and connect it to my work. And that's why I always go back to, like, messy, never straight, find your own connection, because it's like your own recipe, you know. And even right now, I feel like people got a little bit offended with the Latinx and all Latino and all Latina, and they're like, you know, they get a little bit anxious. And for me, I love Latinx because it's non-gender, it's a new generation, it's a new thing, you know. It's not the old thing, it's not Hispanic, it's, you know, it's a new thing. And I feel like right now with the movement and everything that we see right now, diversity of Latinos, it's new. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not being like the people that came before them. They're creating something new. They're building a new path. So I feel like even that word represents that.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like be having changed, that's probably why it's been so hard for everyone to get used to it?
I think it says a lot about the culture and mm-hmm. how divided it is and how not acceptable diversity it is. I feel like, you know, because in the U.S. you celebrate Latinx heritage, and in Latin America you don't celebrate it. It's very weird for them to understand it. And I think even understanding being a first or second generation living in the US, it's completely different than being growing up in Latin America. So I think even speaks louder of how much disconnect it is right now in the community, and how much the community needs to connect back. Mm-hmm. And how open it has to be to new ways and new expressions of the culture itself.
That's something to think about too. I didn't think of that about that. I feel like it's just been so hard just for me to get, because it's like me, I'm still learning my roots, you know?
I don't know. No, it is overwhelming, but I think it's great. You know, that's why I always identify mixed heritage, because it's how I see myself. And I feel like how you see yourself and how you should be identified, not how people are trying to box you or define you. Because it's okay to say, take things that you feel connected and be like, maybe at this point in my life, I'm not so connected to these other things. And that's valid too.
Yeah, I think that's true. I feel like that's just something. I feel like I'm so glad I'm sharing this too, because it's like, it makes me feel so comfortable I get to talk about this with someone. It's because most people don't understand what it's like, you know, being mixed, but being like mixed in certain cultures too that are so strong in their culture, within their culture, and that it's like, if you feel that, if you try to go, you try to not fit in, but it's like you want to go with what everyone else is saying or doing just so you could fit into that culture, but you still have to realize, you know, you're still, you're multiracial. You don't have to like choose one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have your override to choose whatever you feel connected with. I feel like that's why I picked that name of the studio, because it was such a misspell, such a mistake on purpose. So I was like, this is why I'm going to write it, because this is how I want to misspell myself and represent. But at the same time, it feels connected more to me than my whole country. So I feel like even that part, like I do a lot of diversity because Panama has a lot of beautiful plants and everything, but the biodiversity you see throughout North America and South America too. So I feel like even that part, it's that connection to like connect to the things you want to connect to. You don't have to connect to the whole country or to the whole community because it's so diverse that it's overwhelming.
But also me too, like I feel like I kind of like learning more about, because that's the thing, I understand Spanish, so it's like when it comes to certain cultural things, I really get it. And it's been like a fun journey just discovering, you know, like what is like, wow, I really do understand, like just stupid things, like things with Vicks, I'm like, oh, like that has happened in my house, like why haven't I noticed this sooner? Just
yeah, exactly. I feel like that is the Latinx coming to social media, like bringing those things that maybe when we're younger, we feel ashamed of, and now they're being celebrated, those awkward things that family members do. You're like, why is this a thing in my family? And they're like, oh, everybody's Latino does it. It's like, okay, doesn't make any sense, but it's a way to connect, like embracing those quirkiness of those things, that traditions or things that you were told when you were a kid. And like, you're like, now like, oh, that's not real, but well, okay, fair enough. Like example, like for me, it's like, I freak out in my bag, my purse is on the floor, because my money will wash away. Apparently that's a very Latino thing. Until this day, I'm like haunted and my purse should not touch the floor.
Yes. It's like I'm just like, oh my God, I can't do that. Like,
she has passed through that. Who knows what woman's money went left, was gone, but she has made that every other woman has like freaks out about her purse being on the floor. But that doesn't mean, like, that's the beautiful thing. It's like those things that you, like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, it doesn't make any sense. And the older you get, you see yourself being caught on those habits that your parents taught you. And you're, like, afraid and laughing at the same time. Because you're like, have I become my mother? And why and how?
That's funny. It's like culture really does have an influence, too, on the way you live. And I feel like that has to be expressed, too. And also expressed in art, too. Like, I feel like when people express that, like, it makes them feel more connected, but kind of feel more at home too. Like, oh, okay, so we all go through this.
Yeah, I think culture is great. Like, most of my work is inspired by my grandma. My grandma she's a badass. She has, like, the most best villains cold face ever. And it's great because she doesn't know about it, but she has, like, the biggest stare that, like, it will haunt you. And she loves plants, but she's, like, her green thumb is amazing. And it's, anything that she grabs and puts on the ground grows, but beautiful. And then you ask her, I always ask her like for tips and everything, because I have a good green thumb, but like her is like witch level, mother nature, you know, beautiful goddess of plants level of her house. And then I'm like, how do you do this, grandma? She's like, I just throw water And I'm like here putting the plant in the right sun, making sure they have the right amount of dirt, like, you know, trying to do all the things and all like mixing different soils and leftovers of rice and everything and coffee and everything. And this woman just like grabs a piece of branch and just throws it on the ground and it grows. And I'm like,
that's just magical.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, that is just a whole different level of like, I'm like, I wish I can hear that, and I'm trying my best, but it's like when she tries to explain me things, I'm like complicating, like making notes, and she's just like, I just do it and it happens. So mm-hmm. I'm like, yes.
That's beautiful. But okay, so I'm gonna be wrapping up the podcast. Is there any final thoughts that you know wanted to talk about? Any points? Any other topics?
Oh, I think the biggest topic is to talk more about the process. You know, I think we should definitely share more about freaking out. Maybe we should find a platform that is not social media to freak out collectively.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, I don't know, TikTok is kind of funny when it comes to like sharing those funny videos of like, oh, this is what I go through, or so, like, I feel like that's probably the most like, or those reels. Yeah, those reels are like those little short videos. But even then too, I feel like that's just like a little piece of like the tip of the iceberg compared to what we really do go through.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to film myself while I'm freaking out and something random happens. Still, because random thing happens, you know, like Murphy loves to mess with me. He loves like when it's seasonal, it's like, yeah, no, not like 20 things will happen that will go wrong. It will go wrong one day. But I feel like sometimes it's like, how do I show that?
Yes.
So how do we show the randomness?
I don't even, as far as like, are you thinking about like content strategy? Or are you thinking about like just documenting it in general?
Just documenting it. Because honestly, like most of the time it's like sometimes the laptop gets mad at me. And it's like, he's not working that day. He's like, yeah, I'm going to like crash Adobe 5 times today. And I'm like, come on, we can do it. It's just me talking sweet to the laptop. I'm like, we're going to do it and we're going to take a day off. Come on, we have to do this. And so it's like me and the coffee and the laptop freaking out collectively.
That is hilarious. I feel like what I've been doing too is just like, I don't know, just record yourself, I guess, if that sounds weird. Or like just like sharing what I did today. That I did. What I've been doing actually though, for my, this is, and I don't know if I'm gonna make this into content, but hopefully I am, and it's kind of like this, I call it the struggles diary, and it's like,
I love the name.
Just because it's like every week there's always something that's going on in the art career industry of Lauren's life, and it's like the point of this diary is for me to share what, like last week, like, you know, like work to life balance. This week would probably be like work to life balance, but then like fulfillment of like doing your work, or just just certain things. And it's like, and that's the thing too, the older I get, the more what I mean by what they say, you know, trust the process. I'm sitting here, I'm like, what does that mean by the process? And it's like, oh, I get it.
It's so true, but it's so annoying that it's so vague. And that's like, it's just like follow your passion. What is it really like? Yeah, something about passion too. That is so true, but it's so annoying because it's like, I understand where the passion comes from, but it's annoying.
Following it. Is this part of the process? Is this part of the passion? Following it? This is what I have to go through to get it, you know?
Yeah. When I say trust the process, honestly, that's why I say like I overthink. And luckily, I'm too busy doing the next task that I don't have time to overthink myself. Like when I'm like a good amount of busy, it's good because I don't have time to panic because I have a deadline. So it's like I will make the deadline work, and so that will calm down the overthinking side of me. But at the same time, it's like trust the process, and I'm like, where's the process taking me right now? It's like I want to know. It's like, can you give me a hint
for real? Like, it's kind of like, and this is sad to say, but it's like waiting for the right person to come. It's like, okay, I'm trusting this process. It's taking forever. Like, it's like, you know, when you
want, it's almost like we should do like a horoscope. It doesn't mean anything, but yet it means everything, design version of things, because it's like, what does it mean? Like, I need my design horoscope right now.
Really? Yes, that would be, you know what?
Just write that down and put it for all.
The design horoscope.
When the design that? Horoscope of the weekend.
Yes, that is well needed, just because it's like, oh my gosh, like what am I gonna go through this week? But
Yeah, 100%.
That is hilarious. Oh, oh my goodness.
that will be coming soon at some point. We'll do this design horoscope thing.
Yeah, that'd be funny because it's like I listen to, and that's true. Like when it comes to podcasts, like the Pisces podcast or the on Sanctuary.
Wait, right? Are you a Pisces too?
Yes.
Oh, of course. There we go.
Yeah, and it's just like it's just so funny because it's like you'll listen, you're like your horoscope, and then you're trying to figure out, you're like, okay, this is what it says. What am I going through this week? What am I gonna go through? Let me take a note now.
I'm Pisces, and it's like I'm like I'm sorry, I'm on Pisces brain. It's like everything. it's Pisces brain. I'm like Pisces brain and Sagittarius moon. It's like, yeah, no, not good.
I do blame things on being a Pisces though. I have this thing where like I daydream and I'm just like, and then they're like, huh? I'm like, what? I'm like, oh my bad. I was just like, I'm in my own little world right now. Like, it's not the time. Like, you don't understand.
Yeah, I blame it too. When I get overly overthinking, I'm like, yes, or like I want to do everything at the same time. It's like Pisces gets excited. She wants everything to happen, and it's like, and then you just have like a crisis because you don't know how to what step one is. And yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm on Pisces mode. And they're like, okay, I get it. It's like.
Oh, I'm happy you believe in the zodiac though. That's a little tip.
I think it's because we overthink and we also clueless. Like anything that's not work related, I'm very clueless. Like I can pass through people and don't recognize because I'm very clueless outside work focused meetings. I'm clumsy, clueless, spacey. So when I'm like just grab me, scream my name, and I'll be,
you know,
I'm
like
not ignoring you. I'm too tired and too like on my head that I don't focus.
Someone, my brother actually said, you know, Lauren lives in the peanut world. Like, wah 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 wah. I was like, why is this true though? Like, it's sad to say that it's true. Like, because it's like they're talking about something I don't even know what they said before, but I just hear someone say like, oh, we'll go here, and I'm like, oh no, I have a podcast. Like, what are you talking about? They're like, did you not listen to what I said?
And I think that is creative brain right there. It happens to me.
Yes,
it's like you were so tired, you're trying to pay attention but you can't, but then you just hear one sentence or two combination word and you freak out about something else, and they're like, what? And I'm like, I was just talking to myself. just having a whole different conversation by myself, and they're like, yeah.
That's why people do not understand. It's a whole world over here.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, any other final discussions or any other certain topics?
No, I think we're good. Maybe next time we'll do another episode if people want it.
This is an interesting episode. I'm really excited to put this out. But I always end off this podcast with, you know, like final words. So do you have any final advice for any creatives that are either going through the same issues or same struggles?
Just don't overthink it and just try to find the things that makes you you. I know it sounds very vague, like we keep saying, but I think going back to things that make you happy and excited will help you connect the dots of what your creative path can be, or what kind of client you want to work with, or what kind of projects you want to be involved with. So I think just stepping back, well, for me, it's always stepping back with coffee and, you know, just going back to those things that makes you happy. Is it very colorful work? Is it very using references? Is it, do you like to work on a medium and stuff like that? I think that's going to help you build a more consistent portfolio and get those right clients for you.
That was very beautiful. I think I needed to take a note of that too, of being happy and consistently being happy with my work.
Everything else we haven't figured out yet, but work-wise.
Because we're still figuring that out, yes.
Yeah, we still need another, we need to add another girl in the conversation that she'll give us that answer.
the mediator, yes. Yes, we do need that. But okay, you guys, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast and tune into the next podcast for next week, and always remember to do what your art desires.